Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Prasky. Here's a question for you parents of teens out there. Have you had the talk with your kid about sex and all that good stuff? If the answer is no, this show's for you. If the answer is yes, this show is also for you. Today we're talking about teens and sex and dating and whether most parents are up to date on teen dating and what's really going on out there. If you're wondering what the phrase hooking up means these days, you're not alone. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is back with us. He owns Family Psychological Services in Lawrence. He is co-author of the Double Take column in the Lawrence Journal World and two books, Dear Dr. Wes, Real Life Advice for Teens, and Real Life Advice for Parents of Teens. And Wes, always good to have you.
It is always a pleasure
Welcome
to be
back.
Here.
Well, you say that teen dating is, what, organized differently now than it was in the past. How so?
Well, we used to see at least some semblance of a relationship between most young people, young adults and teenagers who were involved with each other. And nowadays that still does exist. We have some really cute stories of nice relationships in our books, and we like those.
But here it comes.
Yeah. A much more common part of the dating movement these days is to be in some version of a casual sex relationship. And that can be just hooking up, as you said, which can mean just about anything. You have to sort of ask the young person, so is that the big hookup or the medium hookup or the little hookup? And that'll give you a hint. And it can also mean friends with benefits, that young people begin having sex with their friends. There's a whole movie about that, and kind of an amusing movie, and doesn't work out so well. They fall in love. So it's hard to figure out a lot of these situations. And when you're 16 or 17, where you're getting a lot of your information from is the internet, and I'm here to tell you that it varies dramatically in the quality of information it provides.
Well, what's the consequence of this notion that you just threw out, that some teens, their relationships are pretty casual, yet they still entail and involve sex? Should we care about that? Does that mean anything? What's the consequence of that?
Yeah, this is, of course, in great debate. The way that teenagers are organized neurologically is that they, of course, act a bit before they think, and that's why we don't let them do certain things.
I have some experience with that.
I know you have teenagers, as do I, and we run into this not more than every 5 minutes.
So that's
an endearing part of teenagers, because that sense of impetuousness is part of what gives them the tools they need to learn and grow and become young adults. It's also a bit vexing, because it gets them into all sorts of stuff that maybe isn't a good idea. And then later, when you're in your early 20s, early to mid-20s, I have quite a few young people I work with who feel very, you know, negative about what they were doing sexually as teenagers, and then it's too late. And you don't see – I know it seems strange to us because we're a little older. You just don't see that coming at 16, 17, 18, and 19. And then when it gets there, sometimes you feel a little bit like you were victimized by your own – sexual behavior. So that's one of the many ramifications.
Is there an impact on a teenager's ability to then get involved eventually with a committed long-term relationship, or is the jury still out because we don't know about all this yet?
Well, I think we're still all figuring it out. The 30-year-olds are kind of the ones who are at the first wave of this more casual relationship with sex. And I would say one of the things I'm seeing, and this is not very research-based, but I see a lot of clients. I've been doing this, you know, 20 years, about 22,000 hours with clients. And what I have seen is a much higher rate of relationship failure in the 20s. I have bunches of people who are already divorced, and they're 25.
But is that new, though?
I have not seen this in my career as much as I've seen it lately.
It's that common?
I think so. And I think that there is some disposability in relationships. You remember in Fight Club, he talks about the single-serving relationships that he would make on the plane. I think young people are struggling with this sort of single-serving relationship with their own dating partners. It just doesn't last well sometimes.
So that would suggest that there could be tough roads ahead for a lot of teens these days based on what their experiences are right now.
Well, in fairness, I'm seeing a certain specific population, but they aren't thus, you know, I have plenty of the normal young people that are just struggling with life demands, their family's in a divorce, or they're having school problems. So I have a pretty good cross-section, and I would say yes. I think that they are struggling to form relationships, and the dating pool is a very different place than it was a few years ago.
How does the world of psychology sort of come to grips with this? Are there studies going on right now that begin to examine young people and relationships given this sort of new trend you're laying out here?
Sure. And I mean, you know, you get graduate students that are in – you're just out of their early 20s, and so they love to do research on sex. That's an interesting topic. And we are trying to figure – you know, I think the research doesn't necessarily comport with what I'm saying. There's a lot of thought right now that this casual relationship with sex kind of goes away, maybe like binge drinking goes away, and that it's not
consequential.
Exactly. And I just don't know that I buy that. And maybe I'm just too old or something, too old and set in my ways.
Yeah.
But I just am concerned as I work with young people, talking with them, which is itself a kind of research project, that that isn't really the case, that it does have some consequences.
Well, let's get our listeners involved early in this show. I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions for Dr. West, Dr. West Crenshaw here about teens and sex. If you have a question, this is a good time to call. We have a great expert in studio who can give you a hand with some of these very, very perplexing questions. Our number, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. What's changed, Wes, over the last 20 years that's, you know, led to this shift in the dating culture that you're describing?
Maybe it's kind of the rebound to the sexual revolution that you and I remember early in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
That we, you know, it's kind of the yin to that yang. It's good, I think, that people are more comfortable with sexuality now. I think that's a fine thing. We can talk about it. Young people do not have any trouble talking with me about sex in my office.
Mm-hmm.
That's an improvement. The inverse to that is then it just becomes a little too easy for them. And girls have, you know, I see lots of girls and young women, and I apologize to them if I am offending in any way, but dating culture is largely driven by the way teenage girls and young women respond to their dating partners. And so if they set if they set a very strong boundary or as a culture around sexuality, then guys, as you and I hopefully remember it, had to work a lot harder to be in the relationship, and then the sexual relationship might follow that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how it works right now. And I don't know any girls or young women I see who would disagree with what I'm saying. They are not asserting the same boundaries. And so guys,
that's interesting.
Well,
that's really
interesting. And you can well imagine that's a good deal for guys. Guys don't have to. And as a result, and again, I can't prove this in the literature, only clinically, as a result, I think boys have not matured as quickly. I think their adolescence lasts longer now, and girls are a little frustrated in their mid-20s. You know, I'm in a university town, see a lot of those, a little frustrated that their dating partners are not a mature match for them even in their mid-20s.
Man, I mean, that's really interesting. So again, it just sort of begs the question, what's changed in our culture that these boundaries that women, young ladies have traditionally built around themselves, that those walls now have, a lot of them have dropped, disappeared altogether?
Well, I know how they will describe it. You know, as a part of therapy sometimes is sociological, in that you talk about with your client about themselves in a culture, and they're very able to talk about that. And without picking on cosmopolitan specifically, there is a bit of a cosmo effect in this. The woman, the powerful version of feminism, which argues that you take charge of your sexuality. You take charge of your orgasm. You take charge of how the 10 steps are, you know, and by doing this, you are stronger. You are more powerful. And, you know, I think there's an argument to support that. I understand.
But why does that translate to dropping all the walls around, making it difficult for the boyfriend to engage in sex with a girl?
Oh, we're going to get calls if I answer that question.
Well, that's what we're aiming for here. Yeah.
I think that when you sometimes we believe when we've taken charge of something that we can defy some imperative in our culture and biologically both. And a lot of young women have believed that they can just ignore both their, I think, superior emotional maturity at being in love, at connecting with someone. I think women are good at that. And a lot of research supports that. Gilligan's work on the relational self, that women are relational. And when you go against that by being purely casual in your sexuality, you may well be going against something that's both culturally and biologically predisposed. And again, I think girls have a superior – young women have a superior view of that.
But you're saying there's a misinterpretation going on somewhere in the mix here, Wes.
When there is a need, there is a condition in the dating pool that draws for freer sexuality. There is a competition, and always has been, between young women for dating partners. And one of the currencies that's exchanged for that is sexual involvement. So if you are more free in your sexuality, it stands to reason that your ability to attract partners is going to go up. And in a very competitive dating pool, that is one way to even the score.
Again, let's put our phone number out here and get listeners to engage here and comment on what Wes Crenshaw is discussing here this morning. 816-235-2888 and our email address update@kcur.org. Option 3, KCUR's Facebook page. Wes, you know, if you talk to the parents of teenage girls, would they be surprised by what you're saying? I mean, is this going to be a revelation to many parents or not?
It won't be if they read my column.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, no. More seriously, it is for some, because even though particularly the ones who are in their, you know, mid to late 30s and have a 14-year-old are ought to be knowledgeable about this. It's close enough to their cultural reality, but a lot of times they're not. It's harder when you look at your own child to think of them as struggling with some of the same things that are happening in their culture. It's hard to specify that with the child. And so they don't like to hear it. And, you know, the most common one, I just posted on my Facebook page the other day a link to a new study that indicates teens are sexting pictures more than anyone ever realized. Like 57% of teens have done this.
And that means what? Translate that for
putting
us.
Putting your naked body out there on a text, which, of course, as we have discussed previously, is child pornography if you're under 18. But wholly apart from that legal issue, which is substantial, that is something they do quite commonly. And when I saw the 57%, I think is the number, I was not at all surprised. I hear this quite commonly. So that's one that parents are really, really shocked about, because it seems counterintuitive that teens would be doing that, but it is common. So there is some understanding. Parents are much more willing to talk about and expect to, say, get their girls on birth control or talk to their sons about protected sex than they maybe were in the 80s or early 90s. But that doesn't necessarily translate to having a good, healthy discussion or accepting and understanding the teen behavior and talking about it that way.
I was going to say that this picture that you're describing does seem to lend credibility to the notion that maybe a lot of parents aren't talking to their kids about sex and responsibility and what this is all about, that those conversations aren't occurring very often. I think I've heard you say that's exactly the case. Those conversations aren't occurring as much as they used to, which might again contribute to the pattern you're seeing among young women these days.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's always been an issue. One of the funniest little bits I've ever heard on public radio was done on youth radio by a subunit of that called Blunt Radio, and I posted it on my website. And a girl named Johanna Greenberg talks about her attempt to interview all these adults in her life about the talk, and the adults' response is so funny. It's as funny as it is kind of sad, because they almost can't talk with her without stumbling over, you know, the words. Listeners should hit my website and listen to it. It's really funny.
But it's difficult.
Yeah.
This is not an easy conversation to have.
And in fairness, I always have to really, like, think about that carefully for parents, because it isn't very difficult when you've been doing it for all these years. I don't think about that as difficult. And so in one sense, that proves that if you do it enough, it becomes second nature. And that's actually what I recommend for parents, is when you shouldn't have a talk with your kids. It should be a conversation. It should be something that starts when kids are very young and begins with a discussion of how people treat each other in, you know, what is kids in early elementary school be like, so-and-so is somebody's girlfriend. Well, some parents will just say, now that isn't true. People don't have girlfriends in second grade. You could say that, or you could say, well, let's talk about what a girlfriend is. What does that mean? and visit about that on the way home from school. And you talk about it in this nice voice, like, oh, a girlfriend. And the kids think, oh, this is something we can talk about. And then you're starting to win the battle.
Because you don't your point is you don't have to begin the conversation by immediately getting into the mechanics
right.
of sex.
Yeah, I think about 100% of kids do not like it when you said, I want to talk to you today about your penis.
Yeah.
This is probably not – I think that's going to turn off the neural channels between ear and brain in about 10 seconds. You can have much better conversations talking about other people, for one thing. Get on Glee, and you can just talk forever. You can talk forever about Glee because it's wall-to-wall music and sex. But they wrestle with some dilemmas on that show, and you can have that conversation, and it's much easier to talk about that with your kids and teach the lessons you want to teach than, you know, confronting what did you do tonight with your girlfriend.
Right.
They're probably not going to answer that.
Right, right. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is in the house. Our email address, UpToDate@KCUR.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Joe from Olathe. Joe, you're on UpToDate. Good morning.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, thanks, Good. Joe.
All right, yeah, I was just listening, and I had a question. Actually, this is on behalf of my friends, because they were making fun of us because we have twin daughters. They're a sixth grader. Yeah, got caught sexting.
Yep.
And was like, okay, I'm cutting her off. I think she's 14 now, and she's like, okay, she's not having any really contact with boys. She's not allowed to have a boyfriend until she's 16. And we thought that was a little too strict.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just kind of ran away from the radio. And we were trying to tell her that, and she's like, well, I think it's better for it. And we were trying to tell her, I think it's doing going to do the complete opposite, and we just wanted to hear your input.
Yeah. That, you know, as I always say, whenever I'm on this show, we get the most intelligent questions, and that one is so on the money. Here's the deal. It is important for parents to be involved in the dating life of their kids, and that you start that when they're in middle school. And as with everything else, you slowly begin to withdraw the oversight as they age. What happens in the famous "you can't date till you're 16" is then they, you know, hit 16 and are like an unguided missile, and this rarely works out well. And I obviously can't go into the hundreds of stories I have because they're clinical stories, but it does not usually work out well. The other thing, going back to the sexting, I didn't get a chance to ask the caller whether it was visual picture sexting or text sexting.
What was it, Joe?
Was it
pictures? I believe it was a couple pictures. I don't think it was nude. I think it was underwear shots and stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad she was discreet and wore underwear. No, obviously I'm kidding. This is how young this occurs. You see this in sixth grade. And one of the problems is if you then take away all the technology and say, you can't do any of that anymore, and I'm going to follow you around everywhere, you're really winding somebody up like a tight spring to, at the first option they get, jump out and do something foolish.
Yeah.
And I certainly would have shut down that person's texting for a few weeks. And I would have sat down and said, wow, child pornography. I would have been that clear with her because this is a very serious issue. But if you turn off the phone forever, if you turn off the text messaging forever, you have shut off the entire portal by which teenage girls communicate. And that's like the emotional death penalty for a lot of kids. And I think one must be very cautious in that. And I doubt seriously that girl is going to be a very open subject in conversations down the road.
So you would do what? You come across some inappropriate behavior, sexting or whatever it is, lousy emails or whatever. How should a parent respond?
I think the temporary shutdown is appropriate because that's painful.
Temporary meaning?
Pictures is serious in sixth grade. I might knock that thing out for 2 or 3 months. That's pretty bad.
Meaning taking away the phone.
Yeah. And then I would be having a lot of discussions, as we've talked about with technology, about the ethics. You know, there's no ethics manual in any gadget your kid owns. And you get to write the ethics manual. And one of them is we don't create and transmit sexy pics to our BF until we are over the age that's legal. And then we're not going to worry about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a parent's job after you're 18.
Mm-hmm.
But setting up a clear rationale, because a sixth grader isn't thinking this through at all. They think this is some sort of sign of love to their friend.
And a sign of maturity and a sign that I'm getting to be a big boy or girl. Yeah.
Exactly. And that it's fun and giggly and all these things, just like it used to be prank calling somebody, or you would get together and have a sleepover and call it boys. Mm-hmm. It's the new version, and this just is a much worse idea. And so it's not that I don't think they should have taken it seriously, but I think they probably have deleted an opportunity to really guide this child in a direction that will be more profitable down the road.
Yeah. Joe, thank you for the phone
call. Great call.
Yeah, let's go to Nate from Olathe. Nate, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just wondering exactly what it is specifically that makes girls emotionally superior.
That's a great question,
I just
Nate.
Knew that this would happen.
Okay, Buster, you're on the
I know.
You're on the bus.
What I meant as I zipped through that is that I think the focus, and by all means, I know guys for whom this is true too. It isn't quite as natural a state, but that girls have historically socialized men in how to have relationships. And a part of that has been that relationships, that sexual relationships, which are desirable for both partners, came out of some sort of relationship union. And I'm not saying that they needed to be married. Mm-hmm. I'm saying they were in some kind of relationship, something that was meaningful to them, each other. And that has usually been driven by women, and it certainly was in my life. And that when women pull back and are focused more on a pure sexual interest or drive, that loses a component of the relationship that was previously very valuable. So while I build a shrine to my wife in my home, I wasn't trying to build a shrine to all women by saying that and saying, wow, they are so much better than we are.
Oh, so you're saying that women are less emotionally superior now than they used to be?
I'm saying they have made a choice to follow what I call the sort of Cosmo theory. And certainly not all women. I know plenty that don't. But that by asserting sexuality for as sort of an independent of relationships, I don't think that's as helpful for us in a culture. And sure, that's my opinion, but there it is.
Nate, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the phone call. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, update@kcur.org. And if you're a teen listening to the show by any chance, call us. We want to hear from you, 816-235-2888. You know, Wes, if you're a parent again who is struggling with this idea of how to have the talk, and, you know, the toughest words are the first words to open up a conversation. Throw out a few ideas for how a parent might consider, you know, beginning that conversation and getting the ball rolling to sort of begin a meaningful dialogue. Because I'm guessing that most parents could sort of get into it once they can sort of, you know, get around the first base and start moving around the field here a little bit.
Again, I think media is helpful. If you are able to watch TV shows with your kids and some subject comes up. So somebody, let's say, gets pregnant and they're 16. And, you know, there's plenty of those shows on TV right now. To begin that conversation and say, what do you think you would do if you fell into that situation? What do you think you would do? How would you respond? And most of the time, or to say, what do you think, I don't know, Susan on the TV show ought to do? That's one step back. How do you think she ought to handle it?
And, it's taking the conversation off of your kid and putting it on somebody else.
Exactly. Right? And that's the beginning. And the nice thing about digital television is you always hit pause and have a discussion about what's going on. We do this a lot, and I advise people to do it. For older teens and young adults, one of my favorite shows, and it is really a mature show, is Girls on HBO. I've heard great things
about that
show. It is really astounding. And that show, if you can handle the incredibly awkward sexual moments in the show, it will teach parents so much about what young adults are going through in a humorous and at times very poignant way. If you can handle the discussion after a few years of working on this, that's a great show. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, Glee already. I like to use media because you're right. It's not your kid. It's someone else.
It's a non-threatening way to start. How else can you begin? If you're not familiar with Glee, how do you start it?
I think that if you have to start independently, a good way to do it, again, if you haven't gotten it started before they're 9 or 10, it's tough because when they're 9 or 10, they're not as hinky about sex as they're going to be later because they aren't thinking ahead about it. And what then you may need to do if you've already gotten farther into the teen years on that is to just sit down and try to start talking about anything that isn't about that. Start talking about – so you sounds like you and your girl or boyfriend are spending a lot of time together. Tell me about the relationship. I'm interested in what you guys are doing. And then drop it. And by the way, I didn't mean tell me what you're doing sexually.
Yeah, right.
I mean tell me how that's going. And then drop it so that the discussion has begun to be opened. And spend time with the dating partners. And I should mention we should talk a little bit about the opposite effect of the hooking up culture. There are plenty of boy and girlfriends floating around. That's a little different. And if you have one of those in your life as a parent, you know, try to reinforce the relationship aspects of it. So invite the dating partner along on a get
family
together.
Trip or, or dinner one night or whatever. Yeah.
And get to know them and observe. Sometimes the conversation isn't verbal. It's about observing. And if you can ever come back and say, you know, I really like Fred. He seems like a pretty nice guy. Most of us believe that's the fastest way to get rid of Fred. But in
it's not.
In reality, kids do want you to approve of their dating partners. And if you can find things to approve of about them, that's a good way to get started in the conversation. If they feel like you're trusting their judgment a little bit, they will be better companions.
Instead of challenging and questioning and doubting and everything else. Okay.
Exactly.
Jane from Raymore. Jane, you're on Up to Date with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I enjoy the show.
Thanks.
I was calling to say that my granddaughter is, as we speak, at a church-related camp. It's a mainline church, which I mention only to say that it's not a church that's going to teach absolutely don't, et cetera, but is, the emphasis this summer for eighth graders is on sexuality.
Good.
And, yeah, and I looked at the plan, and it's very... I was just so impressed. It includes lots of factual information, real straight stuff about contraception, sexually transmitted diseases, dating practices, in a what you might call a liberal or progressive faith context, encouraging meaningful relationships and so forth. And one reason I called is because I think while I agree that parents need to have these conversations, and I know schools do stuff, but I think other kinds of contexts like church or other kinds of groupings where kids may hear it differently, I really expect my granddaughter to come back with kind of a different, healthier, and more heard perspective because it's from people she really loves and has fun at camp with. So just wanted to toss that in.
Yeah, Jane, thank you.
In a prior part of my life, before I got into psychology, I was both a youth member of that kind of group and then later an adult leader, as was my father. And that was important in our faith. It was happened to be United Methodist. And that was a great place to be discussing those things. And that's one of the first times in the maybe early 90s I ever saw teenagers and young adults really open up about their feelings about sexuality.
That's interesting.
She's right on.
Well, when did you have the talk with your son or daughter? Was it difficult? Did they already know the answers? We want to know. 816-235-2888, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our good conversation with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Terry from Independence, hang on. I'll get to you right after a break here. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our Tuesday broadcast with David Marinus about his biography of Barack Obama, you can find it and all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, our critics return to review the latest indie, foreign, and documentary films showing on area screens, along with a list of great DVDs in case you'd like to stay put in this very hot weather. Again, this hour, we're talking with Dr. Wes Crenshaw, Brian McTavish, who will be dropping by with our weekend to-do list in just a moment. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Again, our email address, up-to-date at kcur.org. David from Lee's Summit, good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Really
sure.
Appreciate it.
Good to have you.
Thanks. My question is, I know it's hard to generalize, but quite simply, what is the right time to bring this up? Is there an age or a grade level or maybe a conversation topic that comes up sort of just by circumstance? What is the right way? I'm sorry, not the right way, the right time.
Well, I've been talking to my kids about it for since they were probably 5 years old. My goddaughter is about 20 now, and I've been visiting with her about this since she was three or four. Again, in age-appropriate levels. And gosh, that's paid off because she can have a very easy conversation about relationships and sexuality at this point, because it's just like, you know, talking about basketball game or talking about girlfriends or whatever. It's just a comfortable conversation. So it is never too early. One can start that off very early on and have a healthy conversation about it.
Yeah. My own experience back when I was really young, it was explained to me, and it really didn't make sense to me for a long time after that, you know, when the pieces started coming together. Are there any pros and cons about that? Is it good to get an early exposure, even if it might not make total sense?
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point. You don't have to necessarily show a film strip or video about procreation to the five-year-olds. That is going to be like, what? But if you put the main idea you want to communicate is the best and most effective way people relate to each other when they're young. And if you really reinforce good interactions and consequence bad ones, that sets the stage. And then when there's something you're talking about somebody having a baby or something, that's when kids are mighty interested. How'd that thing get in there? And you have a little talk about that, and you have it in this voice. Oh, well, you know. Here's what happened. And you just kind of be comfortable. And you might want to practice in front of the mirror, you know, with yourself or in the car commuting.
Well, how explicit do you get, Wes?
It depends. Your kid will actually lead you in general. And the younger they are, the more curious they are and the less hung up they are. And so they may, you know, they're like, well, how'd the baby get in there? And you say, well, the mom and the dad had sex. And the kid says, well, what's that? Or maybe the kid says, oh. And then later they come back and go, what's the sex thing you mentioned? And they will kind of lead you. And the only thing that matters in all this, honestly, is how comfortable you are talking about it. And the details will not matter as much for exactly the reasons that the caller is stating. That they're not going to put two and two together. I think I've said in our tech segment, when my little boy got his camera at 8, I said, let's have an ethics discussion about this. And here's what you can and cannot do with this camera. One of them is take pictures of people naked. And, you know, it didn't occur to him to take pictures of people naked. It will eventually. And
right.
That will kind of be in his head. And I didn't do it in a scary way, just said that's something that's not appropriate for people to do, and people can do that with a camera. And he knows you don't go to school naked, so it kind of makes sense to him that you probably ought to not do that. They'll get it when the time comes.
All right.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your help.
David, thank you.
Bye-bye.
We have an email here from Nancy, who writes, as it relates to the dynamic of girls not putting on the brakes, how can we encourage our sons to take a bit more responsibility, Wes?
So unfair for me to stick it on to the poor girls. I think what I have done and what I do with young men that I see is to talk about respect. You'll remember that's one of the words that I don't actually think is very helpful for teenagers. But when you use it in a certain context, and that is, how will you respect your peers, young women in your life, in the end, you will be a winner. Guys like winning. if you are the most respectful one. And a lot of young men who want to do that are so blame frustrated because they don't feel like they can compete in the dating pool because the nice guy finishes last. You know, that's kind of true sometimes. And so you have to encourage them that in the long run, that kind of respectful attitude will land them better partners. So there's a sales pitch to doing that. And I think it's a true sales pitch, but you really have to help them think, how can I be better in the dating pool by being a nice person,
yeah,
ethical person.
Email here from Deborah who writes, I've always been open with my granddaughter who's now 15. She has lived with me since she was 9. I agree that you don't have a talk with teens. You start when they are toddlers and talk openly about everything in a natural setting. She spent the last 5 days with her biological mother and joked with me that she never heard the words sex or vagina once, which is unlike our home. She's a very grounded and mature 15-year-old, and I take the credit for a lot of it. Sometimes she has asked things that make me cringe, but I never show it. I answer the questions and incorporate the topic into a learning session. Good for her.
A big hug goes out to you over the airwaves, right on the money.
Okay, let's go to Terry from Independence. Terry, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
How are you guys?
Well, thanks, Terry.
Good. I have a question. I guess in a way to how to approach a situation. I found pictures on my almost 14-year-old son's phone. Mm-hmm. They weren't necessarily, I thought they were inappropriate for his age. He had jeans on and was, but no shirt. He sent it to his girlfriend. She sent one back in like a camisole. And I talked to him about, you know, that was inappropriate for his age. I talked to him also, he's a twin. His twin's a girl. And I said that I would be very unhappy if his twin sister's boyfriend and her were switching pictures like that. My question is, do you let the other parent know? Do you contact them? How do you go about that?
That's a great question.
Because if my daughter was doing that, I would not be happy.
Great question, Terry. I'm glad you called it in.
Yeah, it's great. The issue here is context, and it's an interesting issue. Legally, I'm sure people, teenagers, if they can wear it to the pool, they can probably send a picture of it to somebody, and it's not a legal issue. But it's very clear that once you add the camisole into it, it's very clear that this was a sexual exchange. The way I frame this, what you're getting to see, if you get on Twitter, if you see the pictures they're exchanging on text or on Facebook, you're getting to witness conversations that kids are having in this age group. And it's very difficult to tell someone you're too young to have a conversation about sex with your, you know, girlfriend. So this is a visual, think of it as a visual conversation. And as long as it doesn't violate the law, what you're wanting to do is sit down and say, what does this conversation mean? Because neither of, you know, he can't impregnate her on the text messaging. But the implication there is they are having an increasingly sexual involvement, and you need to talk about that and what its consequences are and what it means to them emotionally and so on. That's the best avenue to go. Now, do you call the parent? I would have to say in this situation, probably yes. I'm a little tight on it because you can create quite a storm in that, doing that. But I think I would say yes in that situation. She's only 14. It's clearly intended to be sexual. And as long as the parents will sit down and have an intelligent conversation about it, that's the ethically correct thing to do.
Awesome. Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry.
All right,
bye. Bye-bye. Sarah,
that was
from
a tough one.
Yeah, it was a tough one. Sarah from Kansas City, Missouri writes this, as a high school counselor, I used to talk with teens that no decision about sexual issues is actually a decision.
Yeah.
It's hard enough to follow through on what you have decided is off limits, but if you haven't made any decisions, those will be made for you in the moment. Go to your house with your boyfriend with no one home. Go to your bedroom, and it should be no one's surprise that temptations are front and center. Parents need to talk about all the inner conflicts teens will experience. Plus, temptations never leave us, so it's a good practice for the rest of their lives.
That rocks. That's a great point. Let me add to it. One of the things I like a lot is to get young people in my office before they have had their first sexual intercourse. And the reason why is I like to give them a frame for that. And believe you me, if I don't bring it up, they will. Anybody who's 16 or 17 and hasn't had sex yet is interested in talking about what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And what I propose to people is that that if they choose to have sex, and I agree it is a decision and no decision is a decision, if they choose to have sex, I ask that they consider doing it in a way that they will have no problem telling their children about in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets folks to thinking, particularly girls, because they can think that way. They can think, someday I'll be a mom and I'll have daughters. And how do I want this to go down? And even that has helped more times down the road. I will get a text or something that says, well, it happened, and I want you to know I'm really okay with it, and I could tell my daughter.
Yeah.
That helps people think before they act.
Mm.
And it doesn't work every time, but it's pretty handy.
Wes, just really quickly, the opposite of the hookup culture, I've heard you talk about it a little bit. What is that?
There's what I call the radical monogamists, and I would not want to leave without mentioning that there is sort of a reaction to the hooking up where these young people who will start dating at 14 or 15 and keep right on doing it into their 20s. I have quite a few of those. Now, you can argue that that's a problem in and of itself because really young people aren't ready for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get smacked for saying that, but
mm-hmm.
they're not quite ready for that. But when I have to choose between the two of them, what is the best analog for a mature relationship is to reinforce in your kids that sexual relationships should come within some form of partnering. And so that fits better. And that we don't have the ethic anymore in our culture. I don't know that we ever did really, that marriage is the precursor to sex, and we sure don't have it now. So we need to try to influence the ethic of a relationship and being a precursor for sex.
Wes Crenshaw owns Family Psychological Services over in Lawrence. Always good to have you, Wes. Thanks for your time.
Super to be here. See you again.